Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, 1826, a woman by the name of Anne Royal publishes her book, Sketches of History, Life, and Manners in the United States. It was the result of her travels around the United States reporting on the relatively new country, but hers is a particular kind of journalism, talking less to politicians or elites or others in power, and more to regular folks, farmers and housewives and others, about their everyday lives. This was quite a radical kind of storytelling, to talk to normal people about, I don't know, gossip. Normal gossip. That's a very interesting topic. And that's my incredibly subtle segue to point out the fact that today's guests are the two hosts of the podcast, Normal Gossip. It's a show where each episode is based around one gossipy story, but no celebrities, no huge scandal, just the little dramas that really define our days and define us. And it is the newest show to join Radiotopia. We're really excited. So we decided to do a couple episodes together about some interesting stories of gossip and rumor in American history, which is how we came across the life and work of Anne Royal. So here for two episodes are the folks behind Normal Gossip, Kelsey McKinney and Alex Sujong Laughlin. Kelsey and Alex, welcome to the show and welcome to Radiotopia. And thank you for making such a great show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is great to have you.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much for having us.
We're so excited to be here.
I know. And then, of course, here, as always, are Nicole Hemmer of Vanderbilt and Kelly Carter-Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
So, Kelsey, Alex, do you want to talk a little bit about how you define normal gossip, especially as compared to things like scandal or celebrity gossip culture? And then maybe that is kind of a way to work our way into the work of Anne Royal, who, and I'm curious if you see kind of her work as in the same spirit as what you're up to.
Yeah, I think we talk a lot about normal gossip, right? I'm putting the normal in quotes here, as being like the antithetical to celebrity gossip or gossip about famous people, right? So you can have scandals in your small town. You can have scandals with your like PTA that is happening in every town in America, but it's not necessarily at the level of attention that we would consider like not normal gossip. So everything Anne's doing is kind of a form of normal gossip, if you think about it.
It also strikes me as a kind of news, right? A way that information circulates, especially among populations and about topics that aren't necessarily considered suitable for normal, official, important political news. Like, this kind of gossip makes up oral history. It makes up kind of the fabric of the historical record in a lot of ways for groups whose work wasn't considered worth writing down.
Yeah, that's a huge part about how we think about what we're doing. Kelsey and I are both writers. We're both nonfiction writers. We write essays a lot. And I think that for both of us, I don't want to speak for Kelsey, but like a big part of my mission with my work is to sort of elevate the life experiences of people and communities who aren't always sort of elevated to the level of being recorded in books or in the news or in history more broadly.
And can we just say, like, it's fun, it's juicy, it's titillating. Like, there's something about, like, ooh, girl, let me tell you. Like, there is something about that premise that people just love to dive in. Even if you don't know the person, even if it has nothing to do with your life, right? And it's completely not major at all. But there's something about getting the tea that I absolutely love.
Any gossip, any secret you have about someone else is naturally tantalizing, right? So even if it's someone you don't know, if I came to you and was like, guess what happened with my second cousin? She lost her thumb. You're going to lose it because you're like, how?
And maybe you'll actually sort of paint a portrait of something bigger or how that town works and kind of, and I mean, yep. I think that's a lot of when we look at what Anne Royal is up to, whether it is, and I think this is something I'm curious to sort of explore, but, you know, whether it is the only space in which she has permission to occupy, or whether she sort of intuitively sees, like, oh, there are a lot of interesting stories to be told in this space. That is the kinds of stories that seemingly she gathers. So she, you know, wasn't a journalist necessarily by trade. She was married to a man named William Royal, who was a Revolutionary War vet and a gentleman farmer. We don't have gentleman farmers anymore, but, you know, he was a gentleman farmer. And he was interested in her education and apparently, you know, kind of encouraged her to read and be interested in letters.
I love it when my husband encourages me to read.
Yeah. I know. Well, look, we're talking about 1826 here, Alex. I mean, you know.
Is a project. I can teach her.
So there's something
she's
going
so
on
smart.
There. But we will be happy to learn that William dies. And so now Anne is her own, has her own path to travel, and she kind of hits the road and starts talking to folks. So I don't know. Do you have a sense, Nikki, of like how revolutionary an act it is for her to do this and moreover to kind of step into the world of journalism and writing in this particular kind of way?
So it is a pretty traditional path to independence for women in this era, for their husbands to die, and then suddenly they have more space as a widow to actually go out into the world and do things, but to do what she's doing, which is to wander around unescorted and to pick up salacious bits of gossip, particularly salacious bits of gossip about elites and people in power, and then to write them down, and then to publish them. This is actually pretty scandalous and pretty unusual. It's not to say that there weren't other people who were doing this, but given how wide-ranging she was and how independent she was and how sort of unabashed she was about taking on structures of power, that feels extraordinary for the early 19th century.
Especially during a time when women are not supposed to like speak in public. Women are barely going to school at this time. Like, there is not a sort of a platform for understanding women through this lens. But I think it's interesting because as much as people will hate on her, and they do, I think the flip side is this is a love-hate relationship. Mm-hmm. It's like, I hate her. I love her. Like, they cannot wait to hear what she has to bring. They just hope it's not about them. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because you read old newspapers and, you know, we kind of have this line, I think, now in journalism between kind of like the tabloids and celebrity journalism and hard news. And you read like old newspapers where there's, you know, it's like a million stories on the front page and they're all just like this person slighted this person in this way, and then this thing happened. You know, it's all like social texture imbued in every single story. Gossip about the elites and about power, which is really kind of where power largely lies. But how much, either in this story or in the work that you do generally, Alex and Kelsey, because like your show does a really good job of mapping kind of like the power dynamics and whether the gossip is going up or down or whatever. And it feels like, you know, at the heart of your show is often people with less power gossiping about people with more power at some level.
Thank you. It's nice to have someone get it, right? Like, that's, I feel like we, Alex and I joke about this a lot, but in the first season, we got a DM from someone, a listener, who was like, I've been listening to a lot of the episodes and it just really sounds like there's a lot of, like, you guys really don't like rich people. Like, you're talking really badly about rich people, all these stories about rich people. And Alex and I were like, yeah. Like, one, they're the stories we get because rich people are really behaving poorly in the world. But two, yes, you've nail on the head, babe. Like, you figured it out.
You're like, just take that next step, one more step, and you've got it.
Yeah.
Pull out your mirror.
Also, like, I think in a lot of ways, all of the stories that we have, you know, obviously they're submitted by our listeners, and then we take them and anonymize them. So we are adding details, changing details to make it a story that is safe to disseminate across the internet. But throughout that process, like, our own subjectivity and our personalities are infused into the stories. So it's like not a surprise that there's kind of a like populist, like, we hate rich people attitude, and like, you know, everybody's gay, and like, we're just, you know, we're reflecting the kind of social world that we live in as well when we're taking the stories from the anonymized or from the originals to the anonymized versions.
And this is something we actually see with historical gossip too, is that over time, as it's passed down as like oral tradition or as it goes from person to person, it begins to collect sort of moral overtones and different kinds of messages. And then they become these kind of apocryphal stories that stick around because as they've been filtered through various consciousnesses, and various value systems, they emerge on the other side as almost like fables or parables. But they start off as just gossip.
Yeah. But they get energized. I feel like, especially if you're talking about like a rumor has energy, you know, like it grows and it spreads like a fire. And then next thing you know, all violence is breaking out, like all hell is breaking loose. It's just wild to me to see how like something can start out as a simple, did you know? Guess what I heard? And next thing you know, it's on the cover of some newspaper or someone's losing a job or someone's marriage is busted up, you know, like.
Right. Which is certainly something that happens with Anne Royal. Like a lot of the stories she's telling are ruffling feathers. And in particular, this is the second Great Awakening. And she kind of has real issues with evangelicals and a lot of the sort of political structures of the time. There's a couple specific stories about how she gets in trouble with those folks. But like, Kelly, you started to go there. I think it's one of the bigger questions I have, both with this Anne Royal question, but also in the work that you do as historians, which is, you know, how does a rumor... Well, does rumor have to fight uphill if it starts as a rumor to then be accepted as history? And how? And what is that path? And, you know, I'm thinking of like lots of stories that start as rumor and then through either time get recontextualized or just through someone doing the actual work. I mean, what's the best example? I mean, maybe Sally Hemings, right?
I don't feel like I'm a good person to ask about rumors because I'm like, when I study, you know, enslaved people, when rumors start of like rebellions, and then it's all out violence. You know what I mean? Rumors are never the friend of enslaved people or the people that I study. But like, yeah, I do think that there are rumors about like who's daddy, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. who's your father, who are you related to? What do we do when we have people that are both black and white and they're related? And like, we don't talk about like those things. Those are sort of, you know, again, taboo, but those rumors were realities, really, of what a lot of people were dealing with in the 19th century. Sally Hemings is one of those, you know, sort of like titillating people.
Yeah, I think that's in our lifetime probably one of the biggest examples of something that went from rumor to not just accepted fact that Thomas Jefferson had a relationship with Sally Hemings.
Yeah, and Kelly, you pointed out kind of the deadly edge of rumor, but especially for enslaved people, this was often the way that information got passed along and then passed down. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Thomas Jefferson, there was this rumor that was circulating for a long time in the 1990s, 2000s at Monticello, that there was a grave for enslaved people under the parking lot. And somebody finally decided, hey, we should go see if there's actually like a grave of enslaved people under the parking lot. And so they dug it up and they found out that rumor was actually oral history and that it was true. It became this way that story was passed down across generations until it was finally taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. And proven true.
Mm-hmm.
Hey there, Jody here, and I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a brand new season. This is their 13th season, and the show just keeps getting better. Now, I don't know if you know, but Ear Hustle is the show about life inside prison, but it is not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons, and now they have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships inside prison, and stories of incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. These are stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. I'll be listening, and I hope you will too. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. that taken seriously thing is really key, and I think gets to Anne Royal as well, because obviously, like, all the structural reasons that she wouldn't be taken seriously, but then the particular kind of work that she's doing. And Kelsey, Alex, like, what is your sense of the way that gossip and rumor gets gendered, right? Because so much of the critique of her is, oh, you're telling these stories and you're a scold. I think she's called a scold, and she's called a rumor monger, and she's called a rabble rouser. You know, she's called a lot of things. But, like, there's clearly a sort of gendering of this kind of storytelling.
Yeah, one of my favorite games to play at a bar is, like, I'll ask some boys if they like gossip, and they'll say no. And then, like, 3 minutes later, I'll be like, oh, my God, did you guys hear about Jimmy Butler on the Heat? And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, so you are interested. Huh. Interesting. Right? But, like, that's the difference, right, is that you're saying, like, oh, if we gossip about the Kardashians – that's gossip. But if we're talking about Tristan Thompson, who is often involved in the Kardashian circle, that's sports rumor. That's different, right? There's a clear line drawn there. And, like, obviously women also watch sports, but it's a gendered division that people are trying to make between those two forms of talk that are exactly the same.
Truly. And also, I think that you can see it in the listenership of our show, which is very, very, very heavily female. Just so many women. There are men. But, you know, for a podcast that has grown out of a sports site, Defector Media, whose readership is predominantly male, it is interesting to see how many women have sort of come to the table for this show. And I think part of that is because, like, humans in general, you know, have a desire to gossip, but women especially, I think, feel like they maybe aren't allowed to, or that it's icky to do so.
And that gender division was written into the law at the time that Anne Royal was, you know, writing her stories. She was found guilty of being what they called at the time a common scold, which was an actual crime. If you were a scold, you got to be arrested. And being a scold was just, this is how they talked about it in the case of Royal, an evil disposed person and a common scold and disturber of the peace and happiness of her quiet and honest neighbors.
She sounds awesome.
I love it.
To be fair, not to defend the laws of 1820s, but to be fair, this was not just because of her writing. She also seemed to like to stir some shit up, and she did seem to get into some squabbles with her neighbors. No surprise, I mean, given, you know, what we know about her. But this is from her time in D.C. where she, like, really starts to start beef with her. This actually would be a good episode of Normal Gossip, but she starts beef with the fact that her window overlooked a fire station where a Presbyterian congregation was holding nightly prayer meetings, and they were being too loud, and so she would throw stuff at them, and she would get out, and she apparently called one of the Presbyterians a damned old bald-headed son of a bitch, and then, like, went back and forth, and then it became a thing, and that's where she went before a judge and got called a common scold. Which I think, and then, Kelly,
can I tell my favorite story about the John Quincy Adams story?
Well, let's do that in a second. But first, there's also this punishment that she almost faced.
Oh, yes. Yo,
which is called dunking. Yeah. Do you want to describe this punishment that she that was the typical punishment for being a common scold?
So basically, it looks like a contraption in which they would tie a woman to a chair, which was, like, on the end of this long post, and then a group of men would, like, either, I guess, jump on the post or push the post, and it would dunk the woman's chair, like, down into water. And I'm like, are they waterboarding?
It's like a dunk tank, but not fun.
Not fun at all. But you are strapped into that
chair.
That's
no good.
So it's called, folks should look this up. We'll tweet pictures of this. But it's called a ducking stool, and then dunking. I think are sort of the same name. I mean, part of this is just, like, men will build a ridiculously complicated contraption for anything, even something as awful as this. But there's, like, these over-the-top wooden things with this long pole and this chair that they've strapped women to at the end of, and then they just dunk them in water over and over.
It looks like a catapult. That's what it looks like, a catapult.
That's horrific.
Basically. And then, except she's bopping up and down like a seesaw in the water, or they could drag you throughout the street on it to just be ridiculed or mocked. I mean, it's... It's brutal. Like, I feel like the way we come after women, the way we punish women that we think are engaged in deviant behavior is just, it's insane to me that there are whole contraptions for this.
Yeah.
So did this happen?
But the story...
Well, she, the judge, and maybe, you know, she maybe she gets credit as a moment where people realized how barbaric this was. The, you know, the on-the-books punishment for being a scold was ducking. But the judge in this case said no and then fined her $10 instead. And then
he said
on.
It was barbaric.
Yeah.
So thanks, judge.
Thank you, judge, I guess. Thank you, Anne.
But it was this form of kind of punishment of social humiliation. Like, it wasn't like in the witch trials where they would try to, like, drown the woman, and if she sank, she wasn't a witch, and if she floated, she was, and then they would kill her after that. But this was more like it was somebody being put in the stocks. It was a kind of social punishment. And also, it sounds terrible in addition to that.
Yeah, a humiliation. I mean, aside from the physical torture of it, the humiliation of being publicly dunked. But speaking of water, there's a famous sort of apocryphal story of her where President John Quincy Adams was known for swimming in the Potomac River in the nude. And so
so that there's an image that will forever be in your head.
I know, gosh, right there. She catches him swimming and takes all of his clothes and sits on top of them. And basically says, I won't give you your clothes back until you answer my questions. And it's considered like the first interview of a United States president by a woman.
And you know her first question's got to be boxers or briefs.
Oh, very good setup. Very good.
A little foreshadowing there. Wow.
But beautiful legacy. I love that. No man would think of that interviewing technique.
Princess Diaries ass method. Yeah. Oh gosh.
The one other thing I want to point out, and see if you have any other thoughts here, but you know, it is this interesting thing that I was poking around, and when she's buried in Congressional Cemetery in D.C., and when you look at her gravestone, it says Anne Royal, 1769 to 1854, and it says pioneer woman publicist. And I don't know what that word meant in 1854, but it just sort of jumped out to me as another one of those like extremely gendered words that like maybe people will use when you don't want to use something that feels a little more that acknowledges the actual work that someone's doing. So I don't know if either of you have thoughts about that, but I don't know. That word publicist really jumped out at me.
It's that's really interesting. It makes me wonder if that term has had a evolution in its meaning in the last couple hundred years. But you know, it is funny because I just came from a really intense and fancy like 36 hours in D.C. where not to get too specific, I was around very fancy people, like military people, like whatever. And they're asking me, what do you do? And I say, I'm a journalist because I don't want to get into specifics. But then they say, well, what do you write? Who do you work for? And then I have to come out and say, well, you know, I actually make a podcast. It's about gossip. And then watching their faces fall and the interest just leave their face completely is just, it happened so many times over the last 36 hours. And I was humiliated. And, you know, I did feel, I imagine, a bit how Anne would have felt talking about my work there. You know, I'm very proud of my work. But In circles like this, it's a little bit tricky to explain what I do and not have it have this like veneer of like silly girlishness.
Right, which makes sense also, right? Because she is writing about normal people for the most part, with the exception of interviewing the president in the nude. And so if you're a journalist, quote unquote, like a fancy journalist at the time, you're going to be like, well, that's not the same as what I do, which is go to the White House and wear a suit, right? Like, we have a different job, and therefore she needs a different title.
Well, maybe we can all reclaim common scold as a title and just tell people that's what you do for a living and see how that goes.
You know, I'm not fully convinced that Kelsey is not Anne reincarnated.
TBH. Yeah. It could be.
Something tells me she had some unfavorable behaviors, so I'm not sure whether to take that as a compliment or not.
Like, Anne, are you in there?
All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. And Alex did a very good job of teasing the fact that Kelsey and Alex will be back for one more episode after this. We will talk boxers or briefs, but Kelsey and Alex of the Excellent Podcast and new Radiotopia friends, Normal Gossip, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks as always to Nicole Hemmer.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
Radiotopia.